Okay, so Erevin is a very complex Limud for many reasons. So I taught it for a year when I was in Toronto, and I just want to give you some resources that you can look at. I gave it, this is on page 7, I put it originally at the end of the first file that I sent. If you turn there just for a second, I'll explain what it is. So I personally suggest, if you want a very good, thorough, but not overwhelming summary of the sugyot, Ray Simon put out an excellent book on Erevin, Imre Baruch on Erevin and Rishuyot, which will take you through the basic sugyot. He goes to the basic Gemara, the basic Rishonim, and then he knows everything in all the modern literature, and he'll reference a lot of the modern material for you. It will give you a very, very good grounding in the sugyot. If you read through this book, you'll at least be conversant in the major sugyot. In Erevin, he doesn't deal with Hotzah. He deals with Erevin and Rishuyot, right? So if we're talking about Erevin, to give a little bit of the sugyot, right, you're really talking several different topics. You're talking about the definitions of the Arba Rishuyot, which is the Rabbim, which is Hayachid, Carmelis, and Makom Ptur, which we'll get to their definition. Then you're talking about how to make an Erev, by which we mean really more than one thing. We mean both a Shit of Mavos and Erev Chatzeros. And then sort of our city Erevin, which based on a Ramah is a bit of an in-between, because we treat it from Chomros of both, of Chatzer and a Mavui, which we'll get to. That's really the main limud in Erevin, but obviously, in addition, you need to know the sugya of the Isser of carrying, right? There are cases when there's no Erev, and then you've got to figure out how can you carry, what counts as carrying, what doesn't, Derech Malbush, right, which is one of the key heterim that you'll see, people wearing like the, you know, the belt with the key in it, which is not actually so simple, which we'll talk about for a little bit. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard this from Schechter, but I'm pretty sure it's also statistically true, whether or not I heard it from Schechter, is that Hotzah covers the most blot in Shas of any other topic, right? It's all of Maseches Erevin and like half of Maseches Shabbos, right? If you think about the Prakim Maseches Shabbos between the fourth parak, the fifth parak, right? Bamei Behema Yotza, Bamei Isha Yotza, right? All these different sugyot. And so those are really the topics you're going through. Ray Simon's book is excellent on Rishuyot and Erevin. He doesn't discuss Hotzah. Okay, two modern books that deal very much with practically building Erev. One I have with me, one I don't. One is Ray Bechofer's excellent book, The Contemporary Erev. I gave you that in number two. I happen to really like this book, which came out a few years ago. My big problem with Erevin, some of you will share this and some of you will find this the easiest part of Erevin, is I'm not a visual learner, right? I don't imagine things well, so when I read Tshuvot about Erevin, I can't, for the life of me, often figure out what they are imagining physically. So these authors, right, Shlomo Francis and Ryonason Glenner, did a very helpful thing, is that they took a lot of cases that come up, and they just went around to major poskim, mostly North America, and asked them, here's a picture of something that goes wrong in Erevin. Is this kosher? Is it not? Right? And then they give you the picture, and they give you the poskim, in addition to the fact that they have a good outline of the sugyot, and the pictures are very, very helpful in understanding Erevin. I found that to be something they did that no one else did. Again, often, you know, at the end of the book, they have just a graphical index, which no one else does. So if you can't figure out by reading Tshuva what you're looking for, you can glance at their pictures and you can see, okay, this is what I'm looking at. Is this kosher? Is it not? And then you can look back in the book, which, at least for people who have trouble, you know, visualizing someone's description in words of what is going on, this is very helpful. I'll pass it around. You can look at it. It's an excellent book. There's a few people who've put online resources that are excellent. Ray Jachter has two resources that are really good. One is a 5-part. I gave you just part one, but you can, you know, after part one, it'll just continue part 2, 3, 4, and 5. I think 5 on the basic sugyot in Erevin, and I didn't put it there, but it's at the last page. He also has, on the last page, on page 11, there's also his practical guide for checking Erevin, which is also online, which is very helpful. Also, Certain communities put their shitot online and will give you an outline of the basic sugyot in Erevin and explain the positions they are relying on. Some are better, some are worse, some are more detailed, some are less. I gave you one. I gave you the Toronto one, which happens to be very good. I was also teaching in Toronto, so it was one of the first ones I looked at, but it's excellent. Another thing. There is, I put this in I, erevonline.blogspot.com. There is some crusader in favor of Erevin who leaves his name anonymous and is just line man on his blog, but he actually thoroughly goes through every basic sugya in Erevin, and every time there's an Erev controversy anywhere in the world, he will post about it with an explanation of the sugya of the people who are against, and then a defense of the Erev. It is excellent. Tremendous number of makaros. I have no idea who it is. Right, Dr. Mintz, who we'll get to in a moment, in his dissertation on Erevin, also just refers to him anonymously because he can't figure out who the author of this blog, but it's really good, right? This is not just a blogger. The sugya are absolutely excellent, and literally any Erev in the world that you hear of that has a controversy, if you go on there, he will give you not just like, you know, sound bites, though sometimes they give you that, he will give you the sugyo and explain, this is why the poskim are opposed to it, and this is why the poskim who defend it are in favor of Erevin, and it's not such a well-known source, but it's really, really quite well done. Another thing about Erevin is that Erevin is very controversial and has been forever. And if you want to, if you're into history, before someone was talking about American history, if you're interested in American history, you want to understand how Erevin developed in America, I gave you a link to Rabbi Dr. Adam Mintz's dissertation, which was on the history of the first four Erevin in America. Well, it should actually give you a good feel if you feel like reading. It's like 460 pages or something like that, but it's worth the read. I've read it at least twice, which will give you a history of the first Erevin in America. For, you know, whenever anyone asked you trivia, what were the first four Erevin in America? First Erev was in what city? None of you will get this unless you happen to actually know this. St. Louis in the 1860s, in a kuntres that you can find online, Tikvat Zacharia. The second was New York in 1905, the third was Toronto in the 1920s, and then the fourth was the expansion of the New York area of the 1950-something, the 1950s. North America. North America. Those are the first four. Erevin, his goal basically in the book is to trace when rabbinic authority moved from Europe to America, right? Because the early Erevin, the machlokot, were which gadol do you have in favor or against my shitot, and then starting in the fourth Erev, in the New York Erev in 1950, you have local American poskim who are actually the Bali Shita. That's his goal there. But Toch Kedei, it actually has a very good outline of the basic sugyot in the first 60-70 pages the first two chapters of it. It also gives you an idea of the types of controversies that arise about Erevin. Nothing really changes, so you can read that. I gave you also he has a separate article just on the Brooklyn Erev controversy in Chakira, which I gave you. One of the things that he notes is that, and this is important, you won't understand this yet, but I'll throw it out there and we'll get to it. One of the things he develops, what he notes, Toronto Erev website also points to this, is that most of the early material you'll find in American Erevin have nothing to do with what we do in Erevin now at all. In fact, much of what you'll find in classic Erevin have nothing to do with what we do. A lot of classic Erevin, and in Erevin, more than I think any other sugya, the major tshuvot on the topic are not like, you know, the Nodi Bihuda had a shayla, someone asked him, you know, and he answered. There, this is the Erevin, Paris. What do we say about the Paris Erev, the Odessa Erev? And many of the kundrasim written in Erevin are just kundrasim about, right? So there's an entire book on the Odessa Erev, Chassam Sofer's famous tshuvot on the Paris Erev, the Beit Menachem, the Beis Av rather, writes on the Manchester Erev, right? A lot of sort of the major tshuvot in the last 200, 300 years are about specific cases of Erevin. In classic Erevin, you read these tshuvot, they are relying on all types of shito that you will not have to know about at all. I mean, we'll touch on them, but practically you won't have to know about them. Things like water walls, right? Is water a mechitza itself? Is water a mechitza only because of the slanted ground underneath, which is, you know, at the right angle, which is whatever, we'll see, it's like machloket, but some 20 some odd degrees, depending on how you understand the sugya. Like the original Manhattanator of 1905 relied partially on water walls, partially on pitikra yored visosim, right, on the assumption that when you have a roof, it closes the wall, and they used the openings of the tunnels as walls, right, as assuming that Manhattan was surrounded by walls. This is like, you read a lot of early Tshuvot on Erevin, that's what you're talking about, a lot of combinations of things, of mountains and modern Erevin, pretty much are all Tzuras HaPesach Erevin. They're pretty much all Tzuras HaPesach Erevin. Right? Some of them try to have mechitzot as well, but right? But most of them are Tzuras HaPesach Erevin. What?
The old city.
Now, certain places will claim they have mechitza Erevin, which depends on how you understand mechitzot. Right? Like Toronto claims to have a mechitza Erev. Muncie claims to have a mechitza Erev. Right? Again, that depends on how many walls do you actually need to make a mechitza Erev. Do you need three? Right, which is the Rambam, do you need two? Right, what exactly do you need? That's going to depend, but there are communities that try to have Mechitza Erevin, but most Erevin are Tzuras HaPesach. Another thing that we will see is that probably the number one shita that people quote as the basis for many Erevin is the one that is very rarely used in modern Psak, which is the magic number of 600,000. Right, everyone thinks, and 200 years ago, everyone, right, got into this question. Do we have 600,000? Do we not have 600,000? Do we paskin that way, etc.? This sort of stopped being a thing for two reasons. One, because the poskim who didn't want to rely on the 600,000 heter became more prominent, especially with the Mishnah Brura, right, following in the Litvish tradition of the Mishkanos Yaakov. That's one problem. The second problem, obviously, was that you started dealing with cities that, by any stretch, right, no matter how you try to stretch the sheet out, right, you have 600,000 people, right? What?
Highways also.
Yeah, highways. We'll get to highways. Highways also cause problems. Now, admittedly, there are poskim who attempted to rely on the 600,000 and came up with creative ways of getting around the fact that there are millions and millions of people in our cities. Right, Ramanasha Klein spends a large number of pages in his book Omani Choma, talking about the possibility that anyone who's in a car doesn't count for the 600,000 because they're in a moving ohel, right? And therefore, they're not in the Rishos, they're in a separate Rishos, right? And there's a lot of written on the Brooklyn Arab on this possibility. But Big Gadol, you'll see that people won't bring it up as much, except as a sniff, because, A, they don't want to paskin straight like the Shita that 600, without 600,000 is not a Rishos Arabim, right? Because they want to be Machmir like the other Shitas in Rishonim. And two, again, because there are so many, right, people in the cities. The benefit of a Tzuras HaPesach Erev is that the basic logic of it is that Tzuras HaPesach creates mechitzos, and if you paskin that lo asi rabim uvat lemechitza, right, that even when you have a rabim, however construed, passing through a mechitza, it is not mevatel the mechitza, meaning the wall still counts, so then you could solve the problem even if you felt that 600,000 made something Rishus HaRabim, because once you put walls around it, it will be Rishus HaYachid, except possibly if there is a central place like Times Square, in which case you're not dealing with Shracha, you're dealing with Platya, and then you have the Rajba and the Avodah Zarah who will come to, who claims that even walls don't help if you have a open center, right? That walls only help for roads, but again, this is something that we will get to. Okay, other sources very quickly that I gave you there. I gave you a link to the Hebrew Books, second volume of Divrei Menachem. That is Rav Kasher's Kuntres defending the 1950s Erev in Manhattan. The Kuntres is 100 and something pages. It's written very densely, like Torah Shlema, but it is very thorough. And if you want to understand much of the Sugyot, that will be a very helpful resource. Again, you don't have to read it straight through, but if you have a particular issue and you want to look at it, it has a good index at the beginning. If you're interested in the Brooklyn Erev and a lot of the controversy, that they happen to have put together a book on a journal out of Brooklyn called Kerem B'Yavne, Chelek Dalid, is all about the Brooklyn Erev. You can find it on Otzar HaChachma. If you're really interested in the Brooklyn Erev, you can read Rav Menashe Klein's Omani Chalma, which is also in Hebrew Books. I don't know, I didn't give you the link, which is also like 400-something pages. But if you want a good compendium of all the Heterim in Erevin, that will give you many. The last one, which I forgot to put, but you can write it in, is Nesiva Shalom, or Nesiva Shabbos, rather. Nesiva Shabbos by Rav Bloy, who also wrote Pesachei Choshen, if you've done Choshen Mishpat at all. I'll just say the benefit of Rav Bloy is that he's very thorough from Shulchan Aruch on, and therefore if you're looking at things Lamaisa, he will quote everything. The downside is that he doesn't go through Sugyot. So if you don't understand the Sugyot, it might be hard to understand where he's coming from, but it has a lot of resources from Halacha on. Okay? That's just sort of a snapshot of a lot of the resources that are out there. Again, there's also all the stuff in YU Torah. There's the annual contemporary halacha, and you'll see if you go there, the source packet is there. You can download it, which will give you basics. There's also Rav Schechter Shirim, and this year I saw that when I went to look for it, that Rechal Zilberman is giving Erevin, so he is apparently in the middle of giving Erevin, or I think. So there's 30, 40 Shirim, I think, from Musmachim going through Erevin, if you want to follow sort of like a Shir Yomi in Erevin. Okay, that's a snapshot. If you want to look at this, you can see. Pass that around. I'll get to this one, which is weird, in a minute. Okay, so to the mitzvah of building an Erev. So the main sugya that is quoted in all the major tshuvot about why it is a mitzvah to build an Eruv is from the Gemara in Erevin, Samach Zayin, Amad Beis, Samach Ches, Amad Aleph. It's in the context of... The context of a series of discussions of what happens when the water spills that you need for a baby at a bris milah. How do you bring it? So the Gemara says, there was a baby who had to have a bris milah and the water poured out. So Rabba said, well, no problem. We have a kumkum in our house running, right? So we have a mecham. Let's just bring water for the baby. So we can't. There's no eruv. So Amar Lei Nismach Hashitov, he said, fine. So b'diyeved, we don't have any Eruv Chatzeros, but let's rely on the Shitov Mavos of the city. Right, again, the difference, which we'll get more in detail, but Eruv Chatzeros is when you combine, right? You allow carrying within the Chatzer, which is the, in the time of Chazal, was the courtyard that the houses were directly opened into. And then each of those courtyards, multiple courtyards, would be opened into an alleyway. And when you combine the alleyways in a city, that would be Shituf Mavot. So he said, let's rely on the Shituf. So Amar Lei, Alo Shatvino. And he said, well, we don't have a Shituf Mavot either. And at this point, Rabba gets very angry. So Amar Lei, Rabba Baruchanan Labaye. Mavoa de Isbe Tre Gavre Ravare Kerabanan. Here you have this neighborhood with two big rabbis. Lo Lahavabe, Lo Erev, Lo Shituf. How can it be that you have a city with big rabbis and there isn't an Eruv? That's just, right, that's... And he stares at him incredulously. So Amar Lei, my navid mar, lav urcha, ana tarit nabigir sainu lo mashkechi. He says, whatever, you know, I was busy learning and he just didn't pay attention. I'm sorry. You're right. Now, parenthetically, Rav Asher Weiss has a piece where he notes that you see, it's in like a sicha he has about the value of siyumim, right? You see that Talmud Torah is so important that even though there's a chiyuv to build an Eruv, Abai thought it was a good excuse to say, I was learning, I didn't have time to build an Eruv, right? I assume he means it al derech drash, right? Clearly the import of this Gemara was that under normal circumstances, right, if there are rabbanim in a community, they have a responsibility to build an Eruv. The fact that Abai gave an excuse, okay, justified, not justified. The point is, right, Rabba's assumption, and the assumption of the poskim moving forward, is that that there's a responsibility of the Rav to build an Eruv. And if you look at number two, the Gemara seems to downright celebrate the building of Erevin, and the Gemara says, "I'm reviewed on Shmuel b'shash shetikin Shlomo Erevin tilas yadayim." The Gemara assumes that Erevin comes from Shlomo Melech. So the Gemara says, "When Shlomo instituted the rules of Erevin, yotza baskov amra binim chacham libcha yismach libi gamani." Right, for this, God said, "My son, if your heart is wise, then my heart will also rejoice." Amra chacham binim yismach libi v'ashiv chavei davar. Right? So for this, Hashem said, I'm celebrating. You are so wise for having instituted the rules of Eruvin. So these two sources, you'll see quoted over and over in the central Makaros of people who support the building of Eruvin. Right? One is this criticism of Rabbah, that no community that has great Rabbanim should be without an Eruv. And the second is this fact that Eruv in particular seems to have been something that God loves and rejoiced at, which, you know, presumably if God likes it, then we should like it too. I assume that's the pretty straightforward assumption of that Gemara. Okay. The next source, which is often quoted, is the Rush, and number three. The Rush was asked, there was a rabbi who was dragging his feet in building an Eruv for whatever reason, and they brought in the Rush as an outsider to deal with him, right? To encourage this rabbi to build an Eruv. And this is his language. He said, Al shelo ratza lashuv me'ival tom me'inyan ha'eruv. That which you don't want to turn back from your sin and corruption and evil, that you don't want to build an Eruv. Amar ata Rabbi Yaakov Rabbi Moshe De Balanensi, I don't know where that is, Balan, whatever. Karkasavti lechalin in Eruv, I've already written to you. Shenagu b'chol galus Yisrael lahatir mevoseim amfulashin bin akutim b'tzaras pesach. Didn't I tell you that the minna of Klal Yisrael everywhere is to put up these tzaras pesach and to fix the mevot? V'ata asarta osel lekal fariv, I don't know. And you have forbidden in whatever community you're in. The Kasaftali Rayosecha. Okay, fine. You wrote me all your proofs, so why you don't think you can have an Eruv there? Va'ani hodati chashen b'mamash. And I explained to you why they're nonsense, right? Where there's nothing, right? All your critiques are wrong. Vizharticha shetachzor b'cha. And I warned you to retract your position. V'tomer l'kal sheyitaknu mevohoteyim kasher hugel opi gedoleyim. And you should tell the community, go build an Eruv, like your gedolim said. Vinehu godly shata omeid bimir dechan. I've heard that you're still rebelling against me, or against God, or whoever. You're standing in your rebellion. Va'ata machshil et harabim bechilul Shabbat, and therefore you are responsible for people violating Shabbos. Lochein ani gozer alecha. Achar shenitan lecha k'tav ze be'edim shetitaken ha-mevaot ha-mefulashen l'shut ha-rabim shalkutim b'tzorat petach toch shvu'ayim achar shetireh k'tav ze. You have 2 weeks after you get this letter to put up the Eruv. Vim lo titaken ha-mevaot kasher katavti ani minadeh otcha. And if not, I'm putting you in chayram. And that's it. You have 2 weeks. Vim hayita b'meya Sanhedrin hayum imitin otcha. And just know that had there been a Sanhedrin, they would have put you to death for not building an Eruv. Ki ata ba la'akor Talmud shesider Rabbi Ashi, because you're trying to uproot the Gemara. V'lachlok al kol ha-gedolim sha'ayu ad hayom hazeh. Right, and rebel against all the gedolim who ever lived until now. V'rashahim ha-chayim ad hayna, and the ones who are alive. L'chein chazor b'cha v'al titosh tarat Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom. Right. Naum Asher ben Harav Yechiel Zal. Okay. Right, you can see that the language of the Rosh, and you can see why anyone who wants to build an Eruv will be right away quote this tshuva of the Rosh and how seriously he took at it, and the fact that he tested the fact that this was the Minhag. Okay, fine. Why? Right, why is it so important to build an Eruv? No, Zagin Mamre, because he's going against the consensus of the rabbis. Right? He's saying, had there been a Sanhedrin, there's no Sanhedrin, so he's not going against a formal Sanhedrin. Had there been a Sanhedrin, they would have all agreed, presumably. Apparently. What? Or because he was ignoring the Rosh, and he was ignoring all the Gedolim in his area. Right? He was an outlying rabbi. That was, I assume, his point. Right? How literally he means it, I don't know. This is called rhetoric, right? I think it's safe to say that's rhetoric. Okay, so why? Why is it so important to build an Eruv? Okay, good. Well, yes. So people don't violate Yisurim, but that really breaks down, as we'll see, into many different types of Yisurim they could violate. And Eruvin is one of these weird limudim. So this is a book. If ever you want reasons why it's a mitzvah to build Eruvin, this is a book called Smechim Lishamro. This is the third edition, where he collects, though it's a bit cheating, 100... Moshe Mandel. The Rav Vav Bezdin Dekal Beis Mordechai Flatbush. I don't know who he is. He collected, the, like I said, many of them are cheating, but still, 170 reasons plus why it is a mitzvah to build an Eruv. What? We'll get to why. I mean, I don't think you have to read the whole book. I actually did read the whole book. It didn't take very long. But you can also see the list at the beginning. He gives you a summary list of his 170 reasons. You'll see. You know, I mean, look at it. but yes, the first main reason that people talk about is the negatives, right? Is that that if there is no Eruv, so then people will violate Isurim. Now, this really subdivides, and let's outline in the ways that subdivides. If you have a place which is not a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, right, so then we're only talking about Isurim D'Rabbanan. If you're talking about a place which is a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, so then, right, assuming you manage to put up an Erev, it's a place where you can put up an Erev, it's a Rishus HaPesach Erev, a Mechitza Erev, whatever, which would actually allow you to carry, then you're preventing Isurim D'Araisa. The second point is that you'll see that Poskim will divide between whether what they're primarily worried about is Mechal Shabbos B'mezid, meaning are we worried about people who are violating Shabbos and we can prevent them from violating Yisurim, or are we talking about people who are violating Shabbos B'shogeg, right? They just don't realize. And we'll get to some specifics, but just to see the outline of these. So Rav Shechter likes pointing to this Gemara, though he's not the first. Some sofers we'll see in a moment also like this Gemara. The Gemara number 4 is not about, is in the context of Erev Tavshilin. It's in the middle of the second parak of Beitza. But in that context, the Gemara has this brief discussion. It says Tanu Rabbanan Yom Tov Shechal Yos Berav Shabbos Ein Ma'arvin Lo Yirvi V'Tchumen V'Lo Yirvi V'Chatzeros. When Yom Tov falls out on Friday, so on that Friday you can't make an Eruv, not right, or an Eruv Tchumen, not Eruv Chatzeros. And Rabbi Omer Ma'arvin Eruv V'Chatzeros V'Lo Eruv V'Tchumen. And Rebbe says you can make an Erev Chatzeros because there's no issur of carrying on Yom Tov, and therefore on Yom Tov it is an irrelevant thing, and therefore it doesn't count, it's not considered Metaken, and it'll fix it for Shabbos of Alor Revei Tchumen because the issur of Tchum applies in Yom Tov as well. Okay, so if you skip down just to the end of the second line, the Gemara says, Yibayelu, Halacha Kirebi Lekula Lechomra, right? The Gemara had said that Halacha is like Rebbe. So what does that mean? Lekula, lechomra, what exactly are we saying? Without getting to the whole discussion, so now skip down to three lines from the bottom. Amarav, tchilos harad haitzurba merabanan likilkula. So the Gemara, Rav says the first psak of this rabbi was likilkula, caused, right, a, whatever, a destructive moment. So I amart bishlama lekula kamar hainu kilkula. So the Gemara says, I understand if you think that the halacha is that, again, without getting to the details, the halacha is that it's usher, and he said mutter. So obviously that's terrible, right? Because it's usher, he said mutter, now people are going to do something which is usher. Eli yomart luchumra maikil kula ika. But if he said it was usher, and it turns out it's mutter, so what's so bad? So people machmir, big deal. So the Gemara says, no, kaven de makalkila barabim hainu kilkula. Since now the rabim, right, now the masses will mess up, that's the kilkul. Right? Meaning that if you're too machmer on Erevin when you don't have to be, the result is that people will end up carrying anyways, one way or another. Again, right? Mezid, yachid, not clear. And therefore, being machmer and building the Erev is causing people who are going to carry anyways to violate Yisroel they wouldn't have had you built the Erev. Right, so this is sort of the locus classicus of the poskim who focus on the negatives. So the reason you have to build an Eruv is to prevent people from violating Yisurim that they're going to violate. Now this is recorded in Shulchan Aruch number 5, Mitzvah Lachzor Eruv Chatzeros, you have to, it's a mitzvah to go and build Eruv Chatzeros. And the Mishnah Berurah says, Kadesh lo yavo letaltel biser, so that they don't carry biser. Number 7, mitzvah lachzor acher shitufei mavos. Now Mishnah Berurah, number 8, clarifies that he's primarily worried about people violating Bishogeg. Pen yishkechu v'yavo lidei iser tiltel. Maybe they'll forget and they'll end up carrying. Right, so there will be many poskim that you'll find that the arguments that they'll bring are, look, I don't care about the people who want to be Mechal Shabbos before Asya, let them do whatever they want. Right, that's not my problem. What I'm worried about is good God-fearing people who keep Shabbos, right, good Shomri Shabbos people who just don't know all of Hilchos Eruvin, or they know Hilchos Eruvin and they know Hilchos Hotzah, but they forgot a tissue in their pocket, right, or whatever it's going to be, right, those are the people I'm worried about. Right, that's what the Mishnah Berurah feels. The classic achronic source that's quoted in this context is number 9, is the Tshuva Chsam Sofer. And you'll see this Tshuva is quoted all the time. It's quoted by the Chalkas Yaakov, it's quoted by the Minchas Yitzchak, if I remember correctly, in the Sefer, wherever it is, that one, in his introduction, he reprints the Tshuva of the Rosh and the Tshuva of the Chsam Sofer. Right, before he gets into his own discussion, right, that's what he quotes. And the Chsam Sofer writes as follows. So he writes, he was asked by this Rav, and he said, Shalom imenu yedidi harav niru yoyer levar lo berayot midirei chazal shiroi v'nachon lechol kahal amyisrael b'chol mekamot moshodehem letaken mevotehem betikunim tzurat ha-petach o sharei tikunim v'chayotze bo kidei sheli kashlu rov ha-mon im be'otzah mirshutler should be yom Shabbos Kodesh. Someone wrote to the Chsam Sofer and said, please prove to me, provide sources, or give me a source sheet on why it is a mitzvah to build in Eruv. So he says, Dabar zeinu tzarech lefnim. What do you need sources for? This is obvious. The davar, the ulurai, ulurai, it doesn't need any proof. To whom it has seichel, right? It is logical, right? If you can fix a problem, do it. Umina mavur lahedjub, they're chazal. And if you want a source, it's not like I have to find you like some complicated chita, it's in some shuvas harashba that you don't know, right? You have to like search in Bar Ilan, you don't have it, right? It's a Gemara, right? If you know Gemara, it's not like, again, this is also not like some, right? He says, a seva seichel mechayev. Basher yadu shishmirat yom shabbat kodesh me'asot kol chayfetz, hu etzli mitzvot harashiyot. He said, Shabbos, really important. You don't keep Shabbos, you're a mummer of the Kol HaTorah Kula. Right? Shabbos, really important. Right? V'isr hotzam yershut harab l'jera yachar o behipuch hu echad me'otan ha-melachot sha'over aleim hu mummer of the Kol HaTorah Kula. And therefore carrying, which is one of the melachot, is, if someone violates that, then he is a mumar l'kol HaTorah Kula. Right? I don't understand the whole cheshbon. He said, "B'zem avorsham be'irvin samachted adu gavra dinafik bechumer tadim edosha." If you skip down a little bit here, there was a guy there. He's a the classic case in the Gemara of irvin samachted of someone who was considered a kofer b'kol HaTorah Kula for violating Shabbos was someone who carried perish Rashi shudabat shibemtza and shibetzba. It was a ring that he wasn't supposed to be wearing. V'danu kedin kofer b'kol HaTorah k'misha yatsa midat Yisrael. Right, they counted him as someone who left Klal Yisrael. V'kol kach chamura davar acha filu ba'ones. And he said, it's not just the biblical laws. The rabbinic laws are really strict, to the point where we don't even allow you to carry into a chatzer without an eruv, which is not a rishus harabim. But a chatzer is clearly on a biblical level not a rishus harabim. And yet we don't allow you to carry from your house into the chatzer without an eruv. And he says, and yet, even if your house is burning down, God forbid, right, we only allow you to bring out minimal things into the Eruv, right? Into the Chatzah without the Eruv. And therefore, it's not just the biblical ones, clearly even the rabbinic levels of carrying, for whatever reason, we treat with the utmost stringency. Venerally, should look at Derech Malbush, Afil Malbush Asr, etc. And he says, clothes are Asr, even if they're not worn like normal clothes. And he says, it's not just adults. Vanu Mitzuvim al Ketanim, Shlo Largilim Bechulule Shabbat. And he says, this is the third line on the second page. It's not just adults. There is a explicit mitzvah, right? It's discussed in Gemara Yevamos, primarily, that we are mitzuveh, we are obligated to ensure that children don't violate the Torah. Now you can, as an adult, you can try not to carry, right? But good luck ensuring that your little kids don't carry. But if your responsibility in Shemirah Shabbos extends to children, it's very hard if they can't carry anything out of the house. I mean, think about it, right? You have your, you know, your five-year-old is outside, right? Yarmulke falls off, right? Picks it up and walks over to you, right? That's a chilul Shabbos, right? That's chilul Shabbos, right? It's plain and simple. Right, you can't get children used to violating derabbanans. Skip down a line. He says, nobody. I don't care how careful you are about caring for yourself. Try stopping your children, your wives, everybody from not on purpose, by accident, bringing out a tissue, bringing out a piece of bread, a piece of candy, right? There's a lot of things going on that you're not going to be able to prevent, right? You can be as machmer as you want, right? And now the Chazam Sofer introduces something else. And this is important because this is the flip side of it. It's not just the negative. It's also, even if everyone's going to keep halacha, so then you'll say, okay, everything is great. It's not true. If everyone keeps halacha, where there's no Erev and they don't carry, what's going to happen? It's going to cause agony. Right? But in places where there is an Erev, the people who keep halacha have a miserable Shabbos life. He says, you can't bring your talis, you can't bring your, right, you can't bring your sitter, right? This is not easy, right? You can't bring candy for your kids, right? This is not easy. What? Yeah. Look, my wife's first cousin just moved in the summer to be the rabbi in Edmonton, right? Which 9 months a year is winter. Right, during the winter, it's usually it's about -40. Right, if you're going to ask me Celsius, Fahrenheit, it doesn't matter. They meet at -40. Right, so -40 is the same. Right, so whatever, -30, -40, Masha, yeah. Right, they left here in August. Right, in August, and they landed there and turned on the heat. Right, this is a cold place, and there's no Erev. Right, you can't leave the house. Right, you might not want to leave the house, but Bechla, like, right, you can't leave the house, right? What are you supposed to do? It's not like you, right, you can't really go into the backyard, like your mom is stuck in the house, right? You're only socializing, you want to go to your next door neighbor, you can't, right? What? Yeah, good luck, right? You're going to have your one-year-old walk? Okay, fine, but right, their shul, I think it's called the family shul, right? It's very hard to have a family shul, right, with no Erev. It's, right, this is serious. What? Strollers, right? Everything, right? It's not easy.
Part of the mitzvahs, what has changed is all the days have been more Erev interest than ever. A lot of the communities that were classic Jewish communities no longer have So the culture was against having Erev on the east side. So there's almost no.
Yeah.
That was where. I think there were higher Erevim because they didn't carry. And after he passed away, they didn't care. Because it's the mitzvah is, I've seen this in a few places where I was in the saddles around the church world. But what ends up happening? I mentioned Rabbi Sirin that I want this to be the first topic. Because I'm not saying you can't create an Erevim anywhere. But that does have to be the goal if you have a sense of community responsibility. Because you end up with issues kind of throughout the area where if we go to Arizona, it's against the people in that place because it's bothering them, it's there in that place. But it's got to be officially Orthodox school, but it's very left leaning Orthodox school. And everyone carries. So he wanted to speak to this well. Make it for them. So it won't be according to this book, but it will still be an error for carrying.
yeah.
Did it anyway. It's not the first thing to dig into. But the point is that you basically said, you know, the Metzius.
Yeah.
The Metzius is now obviously, we talked about what the workers you pointed out, it's star level, etc. It's not just only people.
Yeah, it can kill. I mean, it can kill a community.
I will say the opposite, which maybe you have to say. Well, there is one problem if you live in the opposite. My children are not even aware of this concept.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the opposition. Don't worry. We'll get to the opposition. Don't worry. I'll start with the positive, but we'll get to it. Yeah.
Well, sometimes we'll see what you do with the community itself. Sometimes you can go out with certain things. But otherwise, you're stuck.
Yeah. And look, it's. Now, sometimes the reason you can't build an Eruv is because of.
You mentioned Crown Heights. I will just mention one quick thing about Crown Heights. Crown Heights, I've been in Crown Heights a few years ago. I went in for his wedding. He had his school from Crown Heights. And it was a winter, there was snow on the road, etc. But I basically, I said I had gloves, but I said, last time, I could take gloves off at some point. And I suppose if they need to get off, there's a shash when it takes them off. Take off. So there was no air in the ground. I said, okay, I'll go without gloves. I had to part of that Crown Heights, from what I understand, even now, there are people who are prepared to go.
Yeah.
They're prepared to go all over the place, but those might have their own problems. You know what I'm saying? Even because to live in a place like that, if you're and there's already, that's a book of
yeah.
There's Shiloh's, but it's much harder there than a lot of places here.
Yeah. Now look, I mean, in some places, the reason I want to build an Eruv is because of they think it's the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and in some places it's hard. I mean, from what I gather from my cousin, the main reason that it's a problem, I was at a wedding with Rabbi Bechofer, so I sat with him on behalf of my cousin. We discussed it a little bit, some of the problems. Part of it is that it's so cold and so snowy in Edmonton that all wires are underground. There are no poles, right? So building the Eruv is a real headache. That's part of why it's not. Yeah, and they said, that's one problem. The second problem, he said, is realistically, what happens? You're gonna build an Eruv, and then what? Who's gonna check it at -40 for 9 months a year? It's a real problem, right? And it's not like you can rely on a chazaka. Realistically, without those poles, right, it's gonna fall. Like, this is not like there are real problems, practical problems. What?
Well, the
Duke. No, that's what I'm saying, is you're going to need a check, right? Because there's a good chance it's going to fall down, but no one's going to want to go out and check at -40, right? It's a real problem, right? This is part of the cheshmer, why there isn't an Eruv. What? I don't know why they live there. They have the most mikvot per capita of like any place in the world, but they have no Eruvin. They have like 15 working Eruvin for mikvos for like 1,000 people. And like, what?
The snow.
No, the Gurmazians just like building mikvot. Whatever. I mean, look, I talked to him.
He was the top guy in his class and the lowest guy in his class. He's going to be honest. But he mentioned Gurmese, and there's a very wealthy family there, which supports that. But otherwise, who would live in 40?
Yeah, anyways. I mean, look, I'll tell you, while I was learning Erevan, this is just in parentheses, but there's a startup, an Israeli startup that is, at the moment, mostly located in Canada, in Toronto. It's a drone pilot from the Israeli army who realized the sort of, what? What? No. He realized the business capabilities of drones for surveillance on like oil pipes They go for thousands of miles because they want to check it, but to get manpower out there is really hard. But if you can use drones, you can cut down the cost by like 50-fold, right? And he wanted sort of commercialize the use of surveillance drones on these. And in Canada, it's a combination of the fact that they have thousands of miles of oil piping in freezing territory, right? Plus they have looser drone laws. Right, so they came to Toronto to set up the company on an international basis. But I talked to their chief technology officer at a Shabbos meal. My like dream is to invent. I asked him how much would it cost you to build a drone that would be necessary to build an Erev. He thought for most community, what to check it rather a check like to do the same thing but for Erevin, like what quality drone. He thought it would cost something like $3,000 total to get the number of drones that you would need to build to check an entire community. He thought like four drones for like depending on the size of Erev. So this is like my dream one day is to actually just invent it for Erev. That's close parenthesis. This is a. Good. Anyways, that's closed parentheses. Fine. So the next paragraph, Chassam Sofer quotes, we don't read it inside, but he quotes the Gemara in Beitza in its entirety, right? So there's the positive aspect, and there's a negative aspect of Kilkula that comes from the Gemara in Beitza. And the third paragraph, again, I don't have to read it all inside. The third paragraph, he quotes, you know what, actually, let's read it because it's actually helpful. He quotes the Gemara in Erevin, and he says, why is it, if Shlomo also instituted Shniot La'arayot, so why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't express his deep joy with the Shniot La'arayot? Why is it that Erevin made Hashem so happy? So if you look at the last line, he says, V'yesh lomar l'fianal, ma'shosef chumar l'sher Shniot, afagav, shu mitzvah, lazut tziag l'torah, mekom wakam l'shach yismach libi, ki ulai yichashlu bazeh b'nei adam, she'enam agunim. He said, look, it may be a mitzvah to set up safeguards around the Torah, but that doesn't mean we celebrate it, because you know what? Now there are more halachot for people to violate. Yes, it protects the Torah, but it's not something you're happy about, right? It's the reality. We protect the Torah with shagim so that people don't violate. Aval k'sha'asas siag l'shmirat Shabbat. But when he made Erevin to protect Shabbos, v'gama satikun sheli kalkalu, and he set the medicine in, right? He set up siagim, but with it, he set up a way of solving the problems that he was creating, such that right people wouldn't violate. Right, it would protect Hotzah on Shabbos, but also there would be a solution so that people wouldn't violate the Rabbanan. That was Chachma. Right, that made Hashem really happy. Right, and that's Chassam Sofer's argument of why specifically Erevin is so exciting for God. Why God was so happy. And then at the last paragraph, right, and then he gives you your bracha. Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael Asher Natan B'Leiv Melachim Skanim V'Sarim Asher He said, thank God, mostly we live in countries where Hashem has made it, the kings are happy to let us build Erevin. Right, which as we know is not always the case, right? There have been certain celebrated cases in the last few years of Erevin that people were not happy about. And I mean the non-Jewish community. In the Jewish community, we know. There's fights about Erevin all the time, but what was it, Tenafly or something? Or no, whatever. What? There was a bunch in New York recently. Whatever. There's one now in Staten Island, right, where my parents live. They're having controversies because several hundred Hasidic families have moved in. They've tried to extend the Erev out by several miles, right? You know, fine. But big adult, they let us build Erev. Okay, fine. The Chalkas Yaakov in number 10, just, and you'll see many Gedolim who will do this, and he says, look, if it was true when the Chassam Sofer said it, Kal Vachomer, it's true now, right? This is like a trope in Poskim on it. Because he said, look, he said, etc., etc., right? And then he says, and because it's such a mitzvah, I did it myself. Right? I searched to find a heter, right? And this is also something that's important, is that it's not actually easy, right? Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes you move into a community, there's already an Erev, you just have to check it. Maybe, you know, you're not an expert in Erevin, so you call someone who's an expert in Erevin, and then you just, you know, he shows you how to set up teams to check it, and you just, you know, keep it going. Sometimes it's not, right? But the Gedolim put their money where their mouth, right? You know, and their mouth, whatever. Money where their mouth was. And they said, look, if it's such a mitzvah, then I have to do it. Okay, so now let me just summarize a few more reasons. So like I said, who are we trying to protect? So I gave you, you can read it, I don't know if you printed it out, but I don't think, so, whatever. You sent out this PDF of the Perador. Okay, anyways, you can read through it. I don't have to read it inside. Perador is Maasiyot of the Chazon Ish. It's several pages, stories of him building Erevin. The things that are the salient points I note from is, first of all, he was very insistent, right? And this is, I think, just important, because people don't think about this. Chazon Ish was very machbid to try to build Erevin, even in Chiloni communities, where there's no desire for an Erev. Right, and people said to him, "Why? Right, like there aren't people breaking down your door to build an Erev so they can carry." He said, "Yeah, but and again, this comes back to our question, right? Are you worried about the people who are Shomrei Shabbos who might accidentally violate Shabbos, or are you worried about people who are going to violate Shabbos bevada, and you want to lower the number of Isurim that they're violating?" The Chazon Ish felt that it was even unlike the Mishnah Berurah, right? The Mishnah Berurah was fundamentally worried about people who were Shomrei Shabbos who might make a mistake. Chazon Ish was worried about Mechalalei Shabbos Bifarhesia, who didn't care, but he wanted to lower it. And therefore, they have stories that are of him trying to build in like very, very secular areas of Tel Aviv. Interesting stories. And the second thing that is notable in those stories is that he didn't just, you know, get the Erev up and running, right? To be responsible to build an Erev means going into the details, and you'll read there where he went and he would check every pole and he'd check every, you know, right? Meaning when we say there's a mitzvah to build an Erev, that doesn't mean like get the Erev up and zeo, right? It's hard work to get it up, to check it, right? This is, yeah.
When we're phrasing it as in we're saying we're bringing up Erev for people who would normally not would just carry anyways, it sounds like we're saying that we, from Shabbos, should rely on it.
No. It's just he's even, right? Meaning. So this is on the negative level, right? Meaning the Chazon Ish was so worried. Meaning, right? He's saying, on the negative level, right? Meaning the Oneg Shabbos component, right? That's gonna make your Shabbos. That obviously doesn't apply in a Chiloni area where nobody cares, anyways, right? But there's still the Yisurim, right? That doesn't mean we couldn't rely on it if we were there. Just practically, no one's asking you in the area. No one's asking you in the area where they are, right? So, on the level, right, there's clearly two aspects to this, right? One is that we're worried that people are going to violate Isurim. The second is that we want to make Shabbos more enjoyable for people who are going to keep halacha, but if there isn't an era of keeping halacha, isn't going to be as enjoyable, right? So, again, Mishnah Berurah, primarily on the negative side, is worried about people violating Bishogeg. Chazon Ish is worried about people violating Bemezid, or even Bemezid.
Even without the worry, he's still build it anyways, because of
well, the only Shabbos would only be relevant if there were people who cared, right? But he's saying, or both. I mean, it's not. I don't think it's. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. This is not a.
If you're in a place where there's only from Jews, or only very, very serious, I don't know if that place exists, but if this is only from Shabbos.
So then we'll get into the Shogeg problems, right? Then you'll have the positive and the Shogeg. No, the Chazon Ish's stories primarily. Again, these are stories. This isn't like him writing a programmatic one. I gave you stories. You know, you can read through it. Like I said, there are 170 reasons here if you ever need, right? This is like, he writes in the beginning that this was like polemics ad hasof. Like it was every week he posted like one reason on his shul bulletin board, and then he collected 170 of them and made it into a book. But I do think, I gave you a brief summary. They basically break down into several major reasons. Again, one is that you're preventing people from violating Shabbos on purpose. The second thing is by accident, but he says people don't even understand how many things are usur, right? I mean, he said, for example, carrying on Yom Tov. You'll say it's mutter to carry on Yom Tov. It's true, but it's machlokes rishonim of whether you can carry shelo letzorech klal or only letzorech Yom Tov. But people on Yom Tov will just carry because, like, why not? I don't need tissues. I'm not going to need tissues, but, like, I always have tissues in my pocket because I had a cold last week, right? So according to many shittos, I know I'm not going to need tissues now. It's not letzorech yantiv, it's aser, right? Again, is that true? But this is the way he thinks, right? He's going through and he's saying there are a lot of shittos that even people who are mamish shomrei, right, Torah mitzvahs have been, you know, from birth, they don't realize that it might be a limitation where you can carry on yantiv. and obviously accidentally carrying things in your pocket. Now, one of the complicated things he says is, look, even all the people who are super machmir and they have their key on their belt, right? If their house borders Rosh Hasharabim, and they open the door, right, and then they let the key go into the house, right, they've carried from Rosh Hasharabim into Rosh Hayachid. Right? I mean, they don't realize that it's not so simple. Right? You might have to unlock the door and then put the key back on your, and hold the knob. Right? They might be trying to keep Shabbos. Right? Meaning, it's complicated. Right? His point is, again, I don't need to go through all 170 reasons. His point is that things are really complicated, and therefore, actually getting it right is not easy. Hence, having an Eruv. He also notes that, according to certain Shittot, based on the sugyos in the fourth and fifth paragraph of Shabbos, you aren't allowed to put something in your pocket inside if you might carry it outside. Now, if there's no issue of carrying outside, so then fine. But if there is, he'll know that according to many shittot, like the Gra postens this way, if I put a tissue in my pocket inside and there's no eruv, then I violated an issur derabanan inside. Right? Meaning the extent of what could be usur. Right? Meaning his point is that you might think that you aren't. Okay, fine. And then he notes that there are certain people who need to carry, and you might as well minimize it, like Hatzalah. Okay, so you can say it's justified even when there's no era for them to carry their whatever, their walkie-talkie, now mostly phones, right? But why make it that you have to rely on a heter, pikuach nefesh, when you could just put up an era for, like, right? That, you know, so his point is that for certain people, even it's going to be mutter. Again, you can read through other reasons, plus all the positive mitzvahs of Oneg Shabbos. I gave you a number 14, a point that I think is worth noting, and then we'll move to the opposition. Rabbi Price, who built the second round of Eruvin in Toronto. First one was Rabbi Graubart, second was Rabbi Price, third was Rabbi Miller, the third was the expansion by Rabbi Gedalia Felder, the offer of Yisod Yeshur, and the fourth one was Rabbi Miller. I don't read it inside, but Rabbi Mintz in his dissertation notes, and you can find Rabbi Price's thing online, that the volume of Hapardis is there, he notes that it's not just that we think it's mitzvah to build an Eruv. Because of all these concerns that people might violate Yisurim, and this is something that Reb Zimmerman pointed before, even if you have to rely on certain kulot, so there's a benefit to building an Eruv, right? Meaning, even if it's not an Eruv l'kol ha-deyot, right? It's better to have an Eruv according to some deyot or many deyot, right? Or, you know, as the English idiom would go, right? Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, right? Meaning, if you can put up an Eruv that will be justifiable according to certain shittot, and therefore Rabbi Price argued that this whole sugya, this notion that there's a mitzvah to build an Eruv, is the reason that the minhag of poskim was to be makil in terms of the shittot they relied on when they built an Eruv. Now here I have to make a point, and then this will bring us to the opposition. This is not fully true. On the Eruv online blogspot, he documents this, that there does seem to be a split here between Litvish Poskim and Hasidish Galitzianer Poskim, right? Hasidish Galitzianer Poskim will pull out every kula to build an Eruv anywhere, right? The main players in the Brooklyn Eruv were Hasidish or Hasidish influenced. I was talking to one of the rabbis in Toronto who built the Eruv out in Winnipeg, which has some interesting problems also, you know, freezing cold Canada problems. It was built by the two Rav Machshirim were Rav Menashe Klein, right, who was Hasidish, and the Nitei Gavriel, Rav Gavriel Zinner, who was the Shamish of the Paparav, right? Like, the Hasidish sort of minog was to be very makil. Litvish Poskim, not so much. Litvish Poskim tended to be a bit more machmir, and he brings the story, I don't know where he heard it from, but I've, you know, that the Rav told the story of Reb Chaim, right, remembering, when the Mishkanos Yaakov and the Beis Ephraim were having their great machlokas, which is basically the machlokas, it's on a lot of things in Eruv, but among others, whether you can run 600,000 and Asir Abba Matla Mechitza and all types of different things, that he said that people in the city would just sit and wait for the next letter. It was like they watched it like a sports game. Like, who's winning, right? The Litvaks or the Galitzianers, right? And he said when the last letter came from the Mishkanos Yaakov, Reb Chaim was so convinced that Mishkanos Yaakov is right that he ran in yelling, right? He won. So, like, there is a... I don't know if this is true. I have no idea. It's an interesting story, but there is some truth to this. I remember once that... in a bit of a surprising moment, because he didn't usually say things like this, one of my chavrusas asked Rav Lichtenstein in one of our like question-answer things, how do you approach chumrah? Right? What's a proper approach to balancing chumrah in your life? And he gave a very Lichtenstein answer. Every chumrah is really a kula, every kula is really a chumrah, right? If you're machmir on one thing, right, it has a cost in a very... But there are two chumrot that I would tell you, and I'm quoting kimad verbatim, right, that I would tell you that you should keep even if your parents are kicking and screaming, right? One was like the shita that the Rush quotes, that when he moved to Spain, they didn't think you needed a prusbul because Shemitah's Ksafim didn't apply to Bizman Hazeh. I have no idea why that was example one. The second one was not Chadash, surprisingly. It was all Erevin in Chutz Laretz. Nikuda. That was it. He's like, because to create the most tenuous heterim, you have to mitzaref too many shitot dechuyot in rishonim and achronim, right? Which, for someone who was usually very, very balanced, that was a very... There were like several ramim in the room who like, their jaw dropped at how machmir he was on this. I'm not saying this is lemaisa, but I have not carried an eruv basically since that day in Chazars. I just can't bring myself. I'm not saying there's a halachic statement. I'm just saying, I know that's the minhag in the family, right? I know Rabbi Willig once told us in Shir, that while he built an Erev because he thinks it's a mitzvah, he will never carry in an Erev because the Rav was equally harsh, and he's like, he's a Talmud of the Rav, he could never ever bring himself to carry an Erev, even if he thinks it's Kashrut Mahadran and he built it himself, he's like, I'm a Talmud of the Rav, the Briskers are... Anyways.
So I just want to add to this, because it was actually when I was at Rabbi Willig's house for Shabbos, I don't want to tell you how to do Shabbos, but you can, because they go on a back staircase in the windowsill of the pull up. So I asked, who was with me. So he said, very good, Aaron, my father built you. I said, why do you carry? My father built Eiruv, it's the greatest. So I recognized from that. And then, over time, I heard, number one, it's stated in the name of Sazen Yish, even though he was very marked to build Eiruv, as you pointed out, it's stated in the Sazen Yish that he has never seen a puzzle in the club, he has never seen a puzzle in the club. What's the reason for that? The reason for that is very simple, because at the club, you decide how much money you put in. You put in every single one. One of them is really expensive to make money. But assuming you're not doing that, almost every chumrah for $10,000 you can build it. No, that's not to have it kosher, fancy. But I'm saying, but in Erevin, you deal with the mitzvahs that you did not choose.
Yeah.
In front of you. So the truth is, Erevin
can be expensive.
Really did carry, I think.
No. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, can't be Erevin. He kid.
And you're in a small little area, you could cruise. And I don't know, maybe in Yeshuv.
In Yeshuv, you probably would, because it's...
You would also,
but,
Erev,
yeah, yeah. The Ruchenstein carried an Alon Shfut,
I was at a friend of mine's house once. No, I won't say who, but the Erev was, down. So I accepted upon myself this idea not to carry with Erevin, and then something happened. I got married. Then Baruch Hashem, we had a kid, and I could do it. And then a couple more, and most of the time, took another one. Any Yeshua I carry. So I'm saying, even if you accept on yourself,
correct. But this is, by the way, one of the reasons I insisted on living in a yeshuv. Because otherwise, because it really is. I've spent many years not carrying, right? My years in Toronto, my years in Washington Heights, right?
Sometimes it's a form that doesn't make kula in the sense
correct.
That if the whole family doesn't carry, it's either the explosion or the funeral of the person's name is wanting to hold his water. It's always sad. She's going on a Bnei Akiva event or whatever, Ezra. client, she said, just remember, we don't care about your show. You know, it was very important for Lichtenstein. It was Kiel, I know. Your whole family doesn't do it, etc. If not, what that means?
Yeah, I will just point out that one of the things Ray Willig raised in this context is Ray Willig said that he was very mocked, but that his wife didn't carry in the era, but not his kids. As they grew up, he let them make their own decisions. He said most of his kids do carry, even though he doesn't. He said the reason was, and just something to keep in mind, he said he doesn't want anyone to think that he views his wife as a second-class halachic citizen and that she can be his Shabbos guy. Because a lot of people will take on the chumrah and they'll let their wife, right? And he thought that...
Of course they let their wives, because otherwise...
Correct. So now, you know.
Well, but this is where I'm saying sometimes
yeah. Father's look, there are full. There is consequences to these decisions. That's I think the point that you have to keep in mind. Okay. Now let's go to the opposition. Besides for yeah.
Just as that discussion of people on that regarding against the Reuven, such as the Salavitch and the family, would that be for all the Reuven, or that specifically the Aron Shulman against Tzur HaPetah?
No, it's most to the Reuven for a thousand reasons that we will get to, right? A camp Erevin, maybe not. Yeshuv Erev, not. It's not just Tzuras HaPesach. There's you can. Exactly. There's you could look. Once you solve the problems of the walls, right, or the whatever mechitzas or Tzuras HaPesach, then you have to deal with karpef. Then you have to deal with skiris rishos. Then you have to, you know, like there's a lot of things. Erev can go wrong in a lot of places, right? It really there's a lot of levels to it, right? Okay. So let's do opposition. Besides for like. General chumrah in general. So as I noted, right, one of the things that we're worried about is, right, we said, one of the reasons you should build an Erev is what? Is so that people don't violate Yisurim. But Ramosha makes the argument in number 15. So he makes a few, right? So he says, first of all, and this is what Reis and Ruman noted before, he said, look, when you're dealing in a place where there's a lot of cities that you can't build Erevin, once you start building Erevin, right, you may lead to the point where people are going to violate more Yisurim, because people will forget there's an Yisur Hotzah, and then they'll be in a place that doesn't have an Erev or can't have an Erev, and they'll be carrying. And if the whole reason that it was a mitzvah to build an Erev was to prevent people from violating Yisurim, right, then you have to counterbalance it when you start realizing that it's going to cause Yisurim, right? He said, first of all, and he says, what about the Oneg Shabbos problem? Right, so he says, look, it's not as necessary as it was in Europe. So you have an Erev anywhere, right? People don't think it's a real Isser, right? You know, it's like this, and you know, there's certain like, things that people just don't realize is a real thing, right? So, you know, at some point you forget that it's an Isser. Shim gang shal gedei zeh yitshiknu erevin kol arim arish kachuchik ezer otza ba'olam. Dabek krachim gedolim insur zabech mamash yakir kol adam. And he says, and specifically the way we build erevin, most people don't know that there's an erev, but they don't actually see it. Right, said it's not recognizable, and you're not going to like people don't realize it's on the telephone pole. He said, I'm not saying it's formal yasser. This is not a gzira. Right, he said, if the concern is that people are going to violate Yisurim, once there are counter pressures that people will violate Yisurim specifically because there are Irvin, so then right, obviously you have to make a cheshbon. So, his first cheshbon is if you make Erevin everywhere, then people will forget there's an Isser, and then when there's no Erev, they'll end up carrying. Right? That's one. He says, V'atikon sheish be'erev l'mechal ha'shabes b'mezev ferheseh, ulai b'shvil eila shein yodin klum, dir shatan v'afakfir shalein ba lehem mitzad shechinucham gen avadim rasha'im, yesh eze ma'ala, v'ulai gam mitzvah l'takon Erevin, shalu yavru gamal Isser otzar shebi'adinu l'menot devdikon Erev, macha sheish l'adunu kishogeg, av shein ha'shogeg mamesh. And he said, look, Ramosha, unlike the Chazon Ish, is not worried about people who are mazed. He said, but, right, it's clear from his argument. He says, those mazed people aren't really mazed, right? They're Tinok Shenishba, essentially. Is it real mazed? Don't give me that. I don't care. Right? Tinok Shenishba, I do care. Right? I do care, because if I don't put the Erev, they're going to carry, and it's not really their fault. He says, "Velchein no." Go to the highlighted part. He says, "Velchein no to yoter lo mashaleka chiyuv limono me'aver." He said, "Still, I'm not sure. There's a mitzvah for him to do it because he says in the line before, I'll come and row of yodem mishamrei tar mitzvah." He said, "You know what? Right?" And this is the consequence of whether you hold like the Chazon Ish or not. Right? The Chazon Ish was worried about people machal Shabbos b'Varesia. And therefore, obviously, always wanted to build Eruvin. Rav Moshe said, no, I'm worried about people who care about halacha. Right? Nafkamina, right, is do I build Eruvin where people aren't going to keep it, right? Where, right, the people, I'm not responsible for their kiyum mitzvos because they don't really care. Right? Rav Moshe had a very different, right, a very different cheshbon. Yeah.
Is that really better? They're not going to keep us anyways, and therefore we're not going to try helping them out. Well,
correct. Rav Moshe doesn't care. Right? I assume it's something like Halitei L'Rasha V'Yemos or something like that, right? There's a sugya that Rishayim, we just let them die in their own mire of sin.
Also a question about Kastri and Seaboard. Who's going to pay for it? Who's going
to charge? Yeah, I mean, you know, that doesn't seem to be his main concern here. He's worried about...
There's always people who will donate money for everything for all kinds of purposes, because they've got a name on a plaque
somewhere that we have.
Where
are
you
going to
put the
write
their name on the
on the arrow? I'll see it in the writing. Just tell the people what the arrow for donating by, so it's
okay. This is a broader topic, and like you could get into the question of what extent do we have responsibility for people who are violating Yisurim the Mazid, but you see that there's consequences to, right? That's why I made a big deal of this at the beginning, right? What do we mean preventing Yisurim? Right? You see that the Chazon Ish felt like he should build Eruvin everywhere. Rav Moshe is much more hesitant in Eruvin, right? Which expresses itself in his psak, right? That he's not. Right, he's famously ossered certain Eruvin because he's not so worried. Right, he's worried about Anshalei Shlomenu. Right, that's really what he thinks.
The idea was people want to be doing a Eruv who don't necessarily know that the Eruv would be built regardless, and so at least in that context, they're not going to be over a Eruv anymore on some small area.
Again, but that's not clear that's Moshe doesn't feel that's his responsibility. Right. Right, again, that's the consequence of this. You can argue with it. Right, the Chazon Ish clearly did. That's why I gave you the Parador. Right, you can read the Chazon Ish clearly doesn't hold this way. Again, you have the PDF. It's not here. Right, it's not printed out. But you can read it, and you'll see that Moshe and the Chazon Ish have very different, right, sensibilities about this, which leads to the Chazon Ish wanting to build Eruvin everywhere. Moshe famously building a lot of Eruvin, but not being happy with every Eruv. Okay, another point. I'll say some of this outside. Number 16. Rav Moshe doesn't buy the Oneg Shabbos one. He doesn't buy the Oneg Shabbos argument, which is part of why, again, he was hesitant. If you just look at the end of the first paragraph, he says, "Shelachein ein tikkun erevin davar nachutz el rak latfuyeh hana ba'alma ein ze inyan hatzarch leishtadlo bozeh." He said, if erevin are primarily so people will enjoy it a little bit more, that's not such a big good reason for erevin. Again, right, you think that this is, you know, 170 reasons, like, okay, we can agree, we can disagree, but Rav Moshe clearly thought, right, you see, part of what led Rav Moshe to be more machmir is that he thought that we don't care so much about the positive aspects, right, about helping people with Oneg Shabbos, right, and two, is that he's really only worried about people who are Shomer Shabbos violating Yisurim maybe by accident. He's not worried about Mazid, he's not so worried about the Oneg ones, which is why he is more machmir. However, he notes at the end, if you look at the bolded part, he says, obviously, it depends, right? That certain people really are. And look, the last paragraph, he says, look, it's true. V'shanim achronot itchilu tvosh yitaknu erevin machmat shanishim istarot harbei bazeh nishim inyan ha'na yitzar gadol. He said, look, what can I do? There are a lot of women who really want erevin because the lack of being able to go out for a meal is real pain. Right? They don't view it as just less enjoyable Shabbos. They view it as painful. So he says, look, I get it. So look at the bolded part. He says, he said, that's why you have to figure it out. If a lot of people want an Erev, fine. So it's said, that's why the local rabbi has to figure out, right, in his community, how necessary is it, right? And what are the problems? And he said, therefore, if there are shito to rely on, even if I don't agree, so you don't have to be mocha, and maybe you should help even build an eruv that's not lakol adeos, right? So you see in Rav Moshe's tshuva both sides. So again, this is, so as everyone noted, right, the way eruvin have developed in the last 30, 40 years is that communities where there isn't an eruv, the community just dies, right? But that's because there are Eruvin in so many communities that they can choose from, right? Rav Moshe's writing, when that isn't yet the case, right? Ben Chanami, right? That's part of the cheshbon. But again, part of the opposition is that if you are less convinced by the positive reasons and you think there are potential halachic problems and it's going to encourage people who are keeping halacha, right? I mean, they're not going to carry that in Eruv, but now you think the Eruv is questionable, Right? So again, if the whole reason there's a mitzvah to build an eruv is to prevent them from violating Yisurim, so then if you think they're going to violate Yisurim because you think it's hard to build a lechatchila eruv here, so then you have to be machshev it. Right? And this is part of the opposition camp, part of the things you have to think about on the other side. Now, there are some... there are some interesting ones. I'm just going to throw them out very quickly. In addition to the halachic questions, right? Of maybe you're not going to build a lechatchila eruv, etc., or an eruv that's kosher at all. You do find some sort of meta principle. So in the Emet LeYaakov, Rav Kamenetsky, he didn't like eruvin because it encouraged people to go out, and he didn't want men and women mingling. And if you prevent them from going outside, then they probably won't talk to each other. But to be fair, that was, if you look in Karen B'Avna Dalid, Sefer I quoted, that collects all the Ark of the Brooklyn Erev, a lot of the Hasidish poskim who normally would be in favor of Erevin, right, because they tend to be in favor of Erevin, the reason they were opposed in Brooklyn was for that reason. Right? Again, I'm not endorsing this position, but I'm saying you'll find that Erevin is one of those things where there's also sort of meta concerns going on. There is also, as I noted in 20, this is from the Toronto Erev website, some people are just worried about the fact that even if they have a post-take who says the Erev is good, they're worried about the influence of Ramosha. And this is just something you have to know. I think less and less. I think Ramosha has been dead for long enough that at this point, if someone has a post-take, like in Toronto one, Rabbi Yashiv gave the heter, so they'll say, look, yes, Ramosha said it was Osir, but I have a heter from Rabbi Yashiv, who's also dead now. But whatever, you know. But there are people in the Lower East Side, Arayom, right? That's the problem, right? Sometimes what pushes against Erev is simply precedent. I don't think I have to read you all the English. I cut out a few interesting pages from Rabbi Mintz's dissertation on it. I do want to just note one of the just a few of the points that come up very quickly, because I see the next speaker is here. So just in a minute, again, you can read inside. Rav Bloch, in his opposition to the Erev, again, as I noted, based on the assumption the reason you want to build an Erev is to prevent Yisurim, said, well, look, if there are enough religious people who are going to keep the halacha, right? If you don't build the Erev, then building an Erev, which is highly questionable, by the same reason there's normally a mitzvah to build an Erev, in that circumstance, there would be a mitzvah not to build an Erev, right? What? Right, if there are people who are Shomer Torah mitzvos, and if there's no Erev, and you say don't carry, they won't carry, if you build an Erev based on some Shito Tchuyot, which you can justify, but is probably wrong, now they're going to build, because they say the Rav built an Eruv. And now they're going to carry. So if what you were worried about was Yisroel without the Eruv, but the Eruv you're going to build is not great, right? Exactly. And this is, so sometimes that's going to be the opposition. There was probably the weirdest, then you'll see that certain people talk about the positives, right? Being Sidurim, Chumashim, etc. What I thought was the most surprising of the Shitot was I think this was Rav Schwab at the end. Yes, it was Rav Schwab. This is the last one I'll say. Schwab had the most interesting solution to solve most of the Shitot, which was build an Erev in Manhattan and don't tell anybody about it. Because this way, right, you're Yotze Lekol HaDeos. Because now, Lemaisa, if they carry, they'll be relying on the Erev, right, according to some Shitot. But they won't know there's an Erev, so they won't carry, so you have minimized Yisurim, let's say. But, correct, but if you care about the Oneg one, that won't work. But I thought that was the most interesting of the attempts to balance the Shitot in both directions. That was Rav Schwab. Again, you can read it for yourself. So again, as much as there really is a mitzvah, on the other hand, right, there are problems. There are certain places where it's just practically hard, and certain places where it really would rely on difficult shitot. And then there are some poskim who think, on balance, it's better not to build an eruv, which then encourages people who wouldn't have carried otherwise to carry. And other posts are going to say, look, realistically, it'll destroy community, right? People are going to carry anyways. But these are the cheshbonos that you'll see. And again, if you want to see many, many more pages on this, you can read in this whole chapter in the dissertation. You know, you can just skim sort of like 50, 60 pages in the English in Ryan Mintz's dissertation, but it'll give you a feel for the sort of push and pull on the social issues that come up in addition to the strict halachic issues. A lot of this is a cheshbon of the mitzvahs. But like Ray Zimmerman said before, part of the cheshbon is that nowadays everyone, right, you have to know that if you don't have an eruv, it will kill your community, right? This isn't just like a... that doesn't mean you can always build it, right? That doesn't mean you can always build it, but that is definitely one of the cheshbonot that people have. Okay, so that is an overview of some of the reasons in favor and some of the reasons that people have against. Just to tell you, on page 7, this is, I don't know if we'll do this inside or not, when we did Erev in Toronto, right, Churchiner gave an outline to the Avreichim of... basic issues in Hotzah Havara. I gave you his source sheet on those pages. You can read it yourself. We'll decide whether we want to do a shir on Hotzah and Havara and things like that. But if not, I put the sources here. I didn't expect to get to it today, but so that you can read it inside. Yeah. I haven't seen it as much as between Hasidim and non-Hasidim. I mean, there is certain distinctions for sure, but in modern Erevin less, because, you know, you have, put it this way, the Erevin that try to do mechitzos will try to do mechitzos like the Rambam, and the ones who just rely straight on Shuras HaPesach don't even have two walls, right? And therefore, you're not really, right? So, you know, it's not like, right? Very rarely is it just Rambam versus other people of two versus three walls, right? So like, right? I mean, there are people who want a Rambam or if they mamash want four, but it's not necessarily in Shulchan Aruch, right? Doesn't... There are some distinctions. I don't know if it's as halak as that in the way that it is. Like, I think the distinction is much more stark between Hasidish influenced poskim and Galitzianer poskim and Litvish influenced poskim. There are distinctions in Ashkenazi and Sephardi poskim, but I think it's not as stark from what I've seen. Yeah.
There's a bunch of people say, oh, this Eruv is totally kosher, but I'm not for myself, I don't follow by this Eruv. Could that lead to another issue within the community? Instead of saying basically, like, oh, it's kosher, but it's not really kosher enough for me in that context where...
Correct, and so I didn't give sources on this, but there were certain Hasidish poskim who, on the one hand, wanted to be machmir not to carry for themselves, but on the other hand, they didn't want to create that, so they would carry one Shabbos a year, right? Or they would carry the first Shabbos the Eruv was built, right? Like, you know, so there were poskim who sort of went that way, but right now, look, certain poskim will say, well, very straightforwardly, I built the Eruv because I think there are shita to rely on, and on balance, it's better to have an Eruv than not. But I, for myself, want to be machmir more positions, and if that means that some people will not be comfortable carrying, so that's fine, right? Meaning I put the Eruv for people who need to carry and for people who don't, right? Certain people are okay with that, right? Certain people are not, but they have other, you know, sometimes more Kabbalistic reasons for not carrying. So then they sometimes come up with these compromises, right? Where, and then you find really, I mean, there are some, I forget where I saw this, there were certain poskim who they wanted to be machmir, they wouldn't carry anything except for one tissue, just to show that be'ikaron they thought it was mutter, but they weren't really going to benefit from that, which I did not understand what the cheshbon was there. So there are, you will find all types of customs that people come up with to try to offset potential issues that come from...
If someone were questioning the Eruv, he would go and carry the task. But in the matter of, you know, public policy, there is no concept of the Eruv in a place like that. So lives, you know, where you don't get into question major highways, you know, city parkway, northeast parkway. You live in a different place, meaning depending upon where you live. I was recently in a community in Fort Florence where, you know, by many stretches of imagination,